And now it's time for more of Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. This portion of the show is sponsored in part by Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup. Rancho Leonero, where your wildest Baja dreams come true. Maui Jim Sunglasses, the choice of the best captains. Shimano Rods and Reels, fish with the best, Shimano. And by Yamaha Outboards, official motor sponsor of Let's Talk Hookup. Here we go. Another great hour of Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. Here's Pete Gray and Rock Cod Rick Maxa.
Welcome back. Hour number two. Let's Talk Hookup in the Mighty 1090. Pete Gray here with Rock Cod Rick Maxa. Boy, we're having a great time talking fishing with Chuggy and Scooch from the Flagler Institute of Environmental Research and learning a lot about sea bass and bluefin and red crab and everything.
I know. I like to say we got to take some phone calls. Well, I'm having way too much fun answering all these questions. We're having a great time this morning. So much good info. If you want to be a part of the show this morning, if you've got questions about our type of fishing, what a great time to do it. Your chance to talk to the guys that look at it every single day. Two ways you can get a hold of us here on Let's Talk Hookup in the second hour. First is with our local line. It's open right now. It's actually the only line that's open into the building. That's 858 area code 457-1090. Again, 858-457-1090 is open right now. Our toll-free line totally packed up, but there's going to be an opportunity for you to get through in this second hour, and that one is 877-792-1090. Again, 877-792-1090. Not only are we talking fishing, talking fun, we've also got a great prize for one lucky caller at the end of the show today, and that's a three-quarter day trip to go fishing aboard the beautiful brand-new Liberty out of Fisherman's Landing. I know they're down fishing Colonette right now, getting that yellowtail. They do Colonette over the weekends, and then during the week, going three-quarter day fishing to Coronado Islands, getting yellowtail, great rock cod fishing. So perfect. Somebody's getting to go fishing on a three-quarter day trip aboard the Liberty.
There you go. Let's go ahead and jump into those jam-packed phones.
You got it. How about this time we talk to John? He's calling us from Mira Mesa this morning. Hi, John. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Yeah, hey, good morning. Chewy, I remember you from last year. You spoke at our Oceanside Senior Anglers Club, and that was one of the highlights of the year, in my opinion. My question was about earlier in the show you mentioned common thresher shark, and I was wondering how many different species of threshers are there. I assume that what we have on our coast are the common, and where would you find the other species of thresher sharks?
Oh, that's a cool question, because I did a bunch of my thesis work, I don't even want to say how many years ago, on the three thresher shark species. So there's the common thresher shark, there's the pelagic thresher shark, and the big eye thresher shark. Our coastline here, especially during the summer, is one of the few places in the world you can catch all three.
Okay. Wow, really? I didn't know that.
You can catch all three. And the most common that we see all the time is the common thresher shark. The commercial guys call them the greens, green thresher. And they're, you know, present. You can catch them pretty much year-round. They like it when anchovy is present in high numbers. They like cool waters, track the same temperatures as sea bass probably in the mid-60s, high 50s to mid-60s. And then the big eye thresher shark, it's here during the summer, most of the warm water months, and it's down deep. It's down 1,300 feet deep all day long. It's caught once in a while. I've caught one trolling for thresher sharks. I caught one off Carlsbad Canyon 8 years ago with my dad. My dad says, hey, that thing's got a, he's deformed. It's a weird eye because they have a huge eye. Eye the size of a grapefruit.
Grapefruit?
Grapefruit.
Come on.
And it actually aims up.
So really?
They look up all the time.
Wow, yeah. That's
so
wild.
So when you catch, like if you catch one down at the Rivijitos.
That's a pelagic thresher.
Oh, that's a pelagic. Okay.
That's the third.
Yeah, and that's the third species.
Third species.
And the pelagic, in order of how table fare, uh-huh. how good they are to eat, typically they're ranked green or the common thresher is the highest. After that, it's the pelagic thresher and then the big eye thresher. They're all three edible, but for the most part, that's usually the way it goes.
Okay.
And yeah. The pelagic thresher is a little bit smaller. They're caught more up on.
And the common thresher, I mean, they get huge. You can catch a 600-pound common thresher. They're around. You hardly ever land them, especially when you hang them by the tail. It's really, really hard to catch a fish that's over 500 pounds by the tail.
Yeah, I believe that.
Remember,
great terrain.
I remember I was in Kona one time, and those guys were talking about catching, like, giant ones. Is that a common thresher?
That's a big eye thresher.
That's the big eye.
That's the big eye.
Because they can get
they usually
crazy
do it at
big,
night.
Right?
Like, yeah.
I got to go fishing with some commercial guys one time, And it was, I mean, they were talking about having fish like up to and including 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, they get over 1,000 pounds also. Yeah. So does the common, though.
Okay, it does.
Yeah.
Really?
They're deep water, the big guy?
They're a deep water fish. We've actually been tagging a few of those recently, and they move. They move along with. So in 30 days, we've been seeing on average 1,500 kilometers,
eight or 900 miles,
1,000 miles in 30 days.
Wow.
Down to 23 degrees north in 30 days.
Yeah, they're out
of
here.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And how's the stock?
Big eye thresher shark, it's really hard to gauge, but I think in the Atlantic, they were definitely overfished. And in the Pacific, it's hard to say because there's no really dedicated fishery that targets the big eye thresher shark. They're caught typically as bycatch or incidental on most longline fisheries. Common thresher shark, I think we're doing probably pretty good. We had a low point in the 80s, but for the most part, that stock is considered to be rebounding and still on the rebuild. Mexico is not using gill nets for offshore fishing, for catching thresher shark. I'm sorry, swordfish and thresher shark. So, they've had a reprieve. There's quite a few common threshers around.
Okay, good news. Hey, thanks a lot for the call this morning. Appreciate that. Look who's on the line.
Mark
Razor
Gillette, yeah,
is on the line from the Eclipse. Good morning, Captain Gillette.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good, good. You're on the boat.
We are. We're trucking up the line here. Had a two-and-a-half day trip we're just getting in from this morning, and first day we experienced that Santa Ana condition offshore, and we're running from the wind most of the day, but we did find some yellowtail down the beach and had a fairly decent little shot of yellowtail once we got out of the wind, and then we picked up our boots and we were able to find a spotted yellowtail yesterday. Had really, really good fishing. We had limits to yellowtail yesterday for our 16 passengers and did some good rock fishing to go with it. And weather is absolutely beautiful yesterday and today. So we're pretty excited about the fishing we saw down the beach here and looking forward to getting back out. Had a really noticeable catch from a young man. Came all the way out from Phoenix, Arizona to catch his first yellowtail. He ended up catching four yellowtail. We had a handful of these yellowtail down here that were, I would say, between 30 and 35 pounds. So it was some good fishing going on yesterday.
That's awesome.
Really
how
good
cool
fishing going on. And what's going on for the Eclipse? You're going to be running day-and-a-half trips out of Seaford there?
We are. We're running. You can just go to EclipseSportFishing.com, and you can check out our schedule. We have a whole list of scheduled trips. I think our next open available trip is the third weekend of February. It's another one of these two-and-a-half-day trips, and that trip is President's Day weekend. So guys getting that Monday off, want to get back in Monday morning, leave on Friday, that trip is available. And then we'll be wrapping up for our call net season here shortly and seeing everybody at the Fred Hall Show. It's a good time to get together, come see us at our booth, and get your company charters all lined up. Now's a good time. The books are filling up fast.
Yeah, I'll bet. All right. How do we get a hold of you once again to see if we want to jump on one of those trips on the Eclipse out of C4 Sport Fishing?
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Yeah, just go on the EclipseSportFishing.com under the trips list and book online, or you can call us at 619-995-6880.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate that, Mark. We'll talk to you real soon. Congratulations on a great trip. Appreciate the call. That sounds like good.
Limits of yellow. That's great news.
Man, for sure. All right, let's go ahead and jump into those jam-packed phones, Rick.
Chuck and Dana Point, you're up next on Let's Talk Hookup. Hi, Chuck.
Morning, Chuck.
Hey, you guys. How's the sticker thing I've been seeing, save the white sea bass head? How much information do you burn off of that?
You know, that's a different program. That's through the hatchery program. They tag every hatchery fish with a coated wire tag that goes into the cheek of muscle of the hatchery-raised mm-hmm. white sea bass juvenile. We're studying the wild adult fish and their movement patterns.
Yeah, they have a hatchery down here in Dana Point. And another thing is, what's your favorite island to fish from Channel Island to Coronado?
I think we've deployed most of our tags out around Catalina. That seems to be a little hub of spawning. And
it's also the closest.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that sculpin fish has been outrageous down here. We've been catching them on that Lucanus, and those jig fishing them is just out of this world.
Nice.
Pretty fun.
Fantastic. Cool. All right. Hey, Chuck, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning.
Speaking of Catalina Island, I got to steal one of my own questions in there, too. I remember when I was growing up in sea bass, you know, you catch them on the sport boats, and always the Catalina fish, it was always 28-inch to, you know, maybe a 20-pounder. And in the last few years I was fishing those things on the coast, I haven't even seen a 20-pounder. You know, you don't hardly see them that size. I mean, they're all 35 and 40 pounds. What do you attribute the fact that all of the fish that we seem to catch now are these giant ones?
Well, it's almost like I paid you to ask that question.
Yeah.
See, that's one of the problems. That's what we're seeing right now. That's why we're really concerned about the stock assessment, because we don't see a lot of backfill. We don't see a lot of that smaller size class fish. You know, if you go to the kelp, yeah, you do see a fair bit of the 22-inch, 24-inch, but still, really small schools. We need to be seeing thousands and thousands of that smaller. We should see an even breakdown of 40-pounders. Actually, probably a lot less 40- and 50-pounders than anything else, because they're the oldest. They've been around. They've gone through the gauntlet. And then as they get smaller, we should be seeing more and more, but we're not. And that was the driver in the stock assessment, unfortunately. And it turns out that, you know, our stock is probably at about 25% of what it should be.
Ooh.
Yeah,
so,
back when I was living on Catalina, a lot of those 28 to, you know, 15-pounders.
Sure.
And
exactly.
That
15,
seems to
pounders.
Be the same cohort that we're tracking through time, and now they're the 50, 60-pounders. So really good boom, good recruitment in the mid-90s, and then that recruitment fell off for whatever reason in the early 2000s. The I'm talking recruitment from a larval fish to an adult or a juvenile to adult. So for whatever reason, those larvae aren't surviving real good.
I know.
That's one of the problems with having just static management where everything's the same, because recruitment's not always the same.
Yeah.
So we have periods in which there's good recruitment, which you might be able to actually kick up fishing pressure because you're not damaging the stock too much.
Yeah.
But there are other times when recruitment's very low, and even if things look like they're fine, you actually need to be reeling back. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, like, well, salmon fisheries in Alaska are managed that way, right? Like
year to year.
It's like, okay, there's a lot of fish this year. We're going to take a little bit more. And,
Man,
there was poor water, whatever it was, 3 years ago when we make all of our salmon. And it's not going to be a good year, so we're taking less this year. And then next year, hopefully, we have another good one, and we'll bump it back up.
Yeah, Alaska's really proactive with their salmon. It's a huge resource for their fishermen, for their state. So. Mm-hmm. They put a lot of effort into management.
It's probably a little before our time. I'll probably be in the dirt by the time that happens, but I bet you at some point in the future, that's where everything's going to go.
California's going to have to do it.
You know, I mean, that's the smart way to do it.
Year to year.
The
year sardine
fisheries like that.
Just like you
that.
Manage an elk herd or a deer herd or anything else. Where you
why wouldn't they do it that way?
It's a lot of work. And right now, we don't have all, to be honest, right now, we don't have all the data necessary to do that. But with this stock assessment, they also outlined the data needs to be able to move in that direction, and that's where we're headed.
So, with you're saying that the there's not a lot of juvenile fish around, and everybody always likes to blame El Nino. Is El Nino a possible reason why we're not seeing these juvenile fish?
For whatever reason, the warmer water years actually seem to be better recruitment. We haven't pinned down the conditions that are ideal for white sea bass, but seems like some of the warmer water years they do better spawning for whatever reason. The last 8 years, I guess we've had some warmer water as well, but not seeing as good a recruitment.
What about drought? Does that have play into
the
it?
Problem is that all of these factors may play some role.
Yeah. No,
we don't know.
It's probably forage based again.
And recruitment is probably the most difficult thing to pin down in any fishery, other than maybe a salmon fishery where they're actually coming back. Mm-hmm. You know how many you are a ballpark are. Came back, and you know what kind of egg production there was. But in the ocean, unfortunately, especially for a wide-ranging fish, you know, to add more to it, what happens when they're in Mexico and not here?
Or
what's happening in Mexico and not here? We don't know. So that's some of the issues.
Interesting. Let's go ahead and jump back in the phones.
You got it. How about this time we talk to Hills? He's calling us from Ventura this morning. Good morning, Hills. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Hills. Hello.
Hey, so I wanted to ask this question yesterday, and when Brandon was on about what I've heard locally here, how you can tell you're on a fin bait school with birds, and if it's squid nest, and that is that the pelicans aren't diving on squid, and but other birds are. So is there can you talk about that? Like, why don't pelicans want to dive on squid, or if that's true?
Yeah, I've seen that trend to hold true, and I don't know if it's because the squid grab onto their pouch there and hard to swallow, but I don't know. I've seen the pelicans eating mackerel, so I think it's probably a function that the squid rarely ball up real tight during the day at the surface, like the anchovy?
Yeah, and another good indicator is mammals. When you see dozens and dozens of rafted up sea lions, it's kind of a good indicator that it might be squid. That's another thing.
Because they're feasting.
Yeah, they're feasting, and they know where to get their calories.
I know you guys both being big sea bass guys, and obviously it's important for you to get on them and fish them. Is there anything that makes you lick your chops more than being rolling down the coast somewhere where you're by yourself and you see that sign and the gyros, there's a big bunch of birds, and you get a little closer and you know that you stumbled onto a nest that nobody stumbled onto before?
Yeah, that's only happened a few times because that's kind of a rarity, especially yeah. Southern California. We have so many boats on the water at all times. But when you do, I'd still remember that morning. I still remember trying to hold in my excitement as I got on the phone, called Scooch. I said, get up here.
Yeah, I think I got one.
Bike fast.
Yeah,
bring
cool.
those tags.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, thanks a lot for the call this morning. All right, let's find out what's biting on the water. Our fishdope.com reporter is standing by. Captain Dave Hanson, your saltwater guide. Good morning, Dave.
Well, good morning. Good morning. Thank God it stopped blowing and raining.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. And you know what's amazing? You come up here to Dana Point right now. We had all that phenomenal amount of runoff, but we have a phenomenal amount of current kind of kicking to the south, so the water's already clean. The water's already clean in the harbor. The water's already clean in the South Laguna area down to Dana Point. The water's very, very clean. You get below the harbor there, and it's dirty for a little while because of San Juan Creek, but the water's cleaning up quick. There's really good, been a really good halibut bite for those that put in the time out there the last couple days at about 120 feet of water from Dana Point down to the San Clemente Pier. Just drifting in 120 feet of water seems to be the key. And like you guys were just talking about, now that the weather straightened up a little bit and the ocean's kind of getting flat and a whole bunch of changes happen with all that runoff, I think somebody's going to stumble into one of those nests here any day on the coast here. That's looking really good for that squid to start showing up. This is the time of the year where we start to see it. So, like they were just saying there on the about the boats, there's a lot of boats on the water. So, finding a hidden nest is going to be kind of cool when you're going to be the first guy on it. So, you got to get out there and look around, guys. And the weather's going to be beautiful for the next couple of weeks. It looks like I'm watching the weather here on buoy weather, and it's going to be good for at least the next 7 days with a tiny chance of rain on Friday. But you just got to get out there and go fishing, guys. The sculpin fishing's insane up and down the coast. If you look, all the boats are having great days on the sculpin, and that's a phenomenal fish to eat. And then you're out fishing and you're just getting refamiliarized with your tackle you haven't touched for maybe a month now since it's been raining so much. So you just got to get out there and go fishing. That yellowtail bite down there off Colonnette still plucking away there for the boats they get down there on it, which is a great sign for us of things to come.
Yeah, no kidding. And, of course, Danny, you keep him informed of what's going on. He spent a lot of time on the water. Fishdope.com is your spot. $20 off a new membership. Join it now. It's good for 365 days. Hook up now, lowercase, no space, is the $20 code at fishdope.com. And how do we find you, Dave?
Well, there's a couple ways, guys. You can look me up on the web at Your Saltwater Guide, or you can give me a call at 949-374-0786, and I'll talk to you guys next Sunday.
Thanks. Appreciate that, Dave. Thanks. Talk to you next Sunday. All right, Ty Ponder, our good buddy from the Saltwater Bass Association's on the line, Rapala Pro Staff. Good morning, Ty.
What's up, Ty?
Hey, good morning. You hear me okay, guys?
Loud and clear. What's going on the saltwater bass circuit?
Well, the bass, you know, they keep biting all winter a little bit, but yesterday wasn't that day for me. You know, I love to say I love it when a plan comes together, and that was not yesterday.
Oh, man.
But I think it was kind of tough all around, as you guys know. Our plan was to stick on Zuniga Jetty all day and fish for three big bites, and we left Zuniga Jetty after about 30 minutes.
Wow.
we left it. I know that... I know guys did catch fish off the jetty, and there was a lot of guys fishing the sand bass on the cable crossing, and I think that's what did the trick for a lot of them. And we wound up with two spotties for something like 2.7 pounds, and we kind of relegated ourselves to spotty fishing, and it worked out okay. We had a heck of a time, which is why we're there. And we gave it the best shot that we had. I did talk to the fellow that won it. He was in line in front of me, and he had a pretty nice bag of three calicos that I saw. And I asked him, I'd love to see this guy tournament fish for a couple of reasons. One is he's obviously got a fair amount of talent. Number two, I said, where'd you catch those calicos? How'd you get them? I threw everything I had. I couldn't catch a fish. He said, oh, well, they're easy to catch. They're all out here. You just got to know how to fish them.
In other words, he wasn't telling.
He did. So we'd love to see guys like that and anybody interested come and do some tournament fishing with us as well.
Yeah. Now, tell us about SWBA.
Well, SWBA and SBS are both going strong this year, just getting underway. And there's going to be, I believe, between the two of them, probably close to 15 tournaments for the year. So if you're interested in doing that, we love everybody to come. You know, I had to have a first time to come. Everybody has a first time to come. And the camaraderie is great. The fishing is not always great, but we're always on the same playing field, I like to say. So we love to have guys come out and check it out at any given time.
Yeah,
it's
what
cool, Ty. The tournament fishing just adds a fun aspect to it, too, and you don't have to be the hardest core, most expert angler just to get in the fun. It's the, you know, the adrenaline rush from when the tournament starts and knowing that there's just something extra on the line. It's a really, really fun experience, whether you're the guy that's, you know, the front runner to win the thing or doing it for your first time. It just adds a very cool aspect to our fishing, and it's a really cool series.
I really have to agree with that, Rick, and I always say even on the slow days it makes it fun just because we're working hard too, you know.
Totally.
Sometimes it's not that fun to sit out there all day when we have a slow day in general, but this kind of keeps the ball rolling and try to, you know, I try to make it fun every time. And like I say, look at yesterday. You know, I like to think we have some of the best guys doing what we do as far as saltwater bass that do fish tournaments regularly. But look at the talent that was there yesterday, the folks I've never happened to have met yet that are extraordinary fishermen. They should come out and compete and see how they can do if they're interested.
And what a great thing to do with your kid, too, like you've done many times, Ty, at get a father-son team going together and a lot of that going on.
There is. There's plenty of it. Gals, I mean, look at Tom and Valerie Hansis from yesterday. I think they finished in the top five maybe yesterday. Very solid competitor, husband-wife team, all of that. And guys fish with guys from all different walks of fishing backgrounds. I'm fishing with John Bearling now, a guy who's really legendary in the business. And here you got he and I. We can usually find a fish here and there. We couldn't yesterday. Anybody can come compete. And I always say as far as competing goes, really, there's still a lot of luck involved, and we're just trying to minimize the luck. That's really where the skill comes in, I think, and make it, you know, maximum skill, minimum luck, and anybody can go on a given day. Matter of fact, we've had multiple times guys show up for the first time and win tournaments.
That's pretty cool.
And it is. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, that's great. Now, when's the next tournament, Ty?
I think it is February 11th for SBS, but I will tell you, you can go to either saltwaterbassseries.com or saltwaterbassanglers.com, I believe, and check out both of those. And if you want to stop by Fred Hall, I'll be doing some Rapala seminars both up at Long Beach and down here in Del Mar as well.
Fantastic. All right, Rapala Pro, Ty Ponder, thanks for the report. We'll look forward for the next one.
Hey, thanks. Take care, guys.
Thanks,
all right,
Ty.
Good job, Ty. I appreciate that. One of the great guys. He's
totally.
Like basically just kind of grew up doing this.
And I love you mentioned the coolest point is, you know, some of those guys get so into it, and his tournament partner in more than half of the tournaments is his son, and those two guys fish together. It's just, yeah,
good
trash.
Fisherman.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. All right, very good.
Hey, when we come back, we got a lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming your way. More of your phone calls, more great information. You stay tuned. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090.
When bad weather and rough seas send other boats back to the docks, Seakeeper allows you to fish longer and fish harder, even in the roughest conditions. Don't believe us? Just listen to what Southern California's own Captain Pete Grosbeck says. He says, we're very impressed with the whole operation of the Seakeeper. We live bait a lot. We go slow, which puts us in the trough. And now basically there is no trough. Seakeeper's newest offering, the Seakeeper 3, is optimized to eliminate up to 95% of boat roll on and boats between 30 and 39 feet. Even better, the gyro is so small it can fit inside a customized leaning post, bringing installation down to a mere 2 days. To learn more about how Seakeeper can change your life on the water and to schedule your free demo, go to seakeeper.com. Take a ride. Be amazed. Seakeeper.
The offshore fishing around San Diego seems to keep getting better every year, and next season should be no exception. The same is true when it comes to Ford trucks. They just keep getting better, too. In fact, the new Ford Super Duty has just been named Motor Trend Magazine's 2017 Truck of the Year. It's the toughest, smartest, most capable Super Duty ever. If you've got a big boat to move around, look no further. Super Duty beats the competition hands down in both conventional towing and fifth wheel towing. Plus, the new Super Duty is built with high-strength aluminum alloy body panels that won't rust ever. For folks like us that launch a lot of boats, that's a pretty big deal. Continuous improvements and innovations have made F-Series pickups the best-selling trucks in America for 40 years in a row, ever since disco and 8-tracks cassettes were all the rage. So whether you've got an eye on the built Ford Tough F-150 or you need the extra muscle of the new Ford Super Duty, you'll find what you need at your Ford dealer. Go to buyfordnow.com to learn more, or stop by any San Diego County Ford dealer. They'll be glad to hook you up.
This is Rick Jensen with Sport Fishing Financial. I think most of you get that I'm a fisherman and work with the fishing community, but to understand exactly what Sport Fishing Financial does, ask yourself these four questions. First, do you really know how much money you'll need in order to retire comfortably? Next, do you know how much you'll have to save on a regular basis to reach that number? Do you have a process that includes a proven investment strategy and confidence that the money you save will grow? Last, do you have a plan for how to turn your savings into retirement income? If you don't have good answers to these questions, you're not alone. But you should, and I can make sure you do. In addition, if you own a business and currently provide or are planning on providing a retirement savings plan for yourself or your employees, we should really talk. We offer an outstanding variety of creative solutions that are sure to meet your needs.
Some of our listeners may feel overwhelmed. Others may believe they are already doing the best they can. In either case, I bet Rick can help. Set a time to meet with him and start planning for your personal or business investment success. Find Rick on the web at sportfishingfinancial.com or give him a call at 949-481-1807.
22nd Street Landing Sport Fishing in San Pedro is home to LA's finest open party fleet, including overnights on the Freedom, Catalina Freelance on the Pursuit, half-day trips on the Monte Carlo, and three-quarter-day trips on the Native Sun. Plus, you can charter the Ultra, Spectra, and True Line. There is always plenty of free parking and a fully stocked tackle store. Take advantage of the Wednesday specials on the Pursuit in Monte Carlo, and kids fish free with a paid adult on the afternoon half-day. 22nd Street Landing Sport Fishing in San Pedro. Call 310-832-8304 or book online at 22ndstreet.com.
For East Cape Fishing, Jen Wren is known as the best. This is Mark Rayer. Great service, top quality equipment, including all accurate reels, CalStar rods, and Cibarron electronics, has put my immaculately maintained twin-engine cruisers in a class of their own. For memories of a lifetime, just bring your hat and sunglasses, and we'll provide a fishing experience that will exceed your expectations. Our calendar's filling fast, so don't miss out. For packages, two live webcams, a weekly fishery report, and more, check out TeamJenWren.com. We pick up at all East Cape resorts, so let's go fishing.
XSRF 1090 AM, Rosarito, Baja California.
You're listening to the home of the Aztec.
What the clam dunk? That's what I'm talking about.
San Diego sports leader, the mighty 1090.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the mighty 1090.
Hey, well, I want to tell you about, we actually, believe it or not, have four spots left as of last week on our Kingfisher Charters trip.
Oh, no way.
Unbelievable.
Cool. Yeah.
Always sells out. I promise you it'll be gone by Fred Hall, so don't wait.
And some really inexpensive airfares this year, too.
Yeah, good airfares with Delta and Alaska kind of competing now.
Exactly.
There. You can kind of find a little better airfare this year. Also, Kingfisher Charters has a special in May, which May in Sitka is probably the best weather month of the year for blue skies. They don't get as much rain in May for whatever reason.
I didn't know that.
And they have arrive in May 17th, and it's $300 savings on a three-day, four-night package at the best in Kingfisher Charters in Sitka. Call them up, ask them about the special, or just join us on our Let's Talk Hookup trip in June, 800-727-6136. Of course, all of our trips are filling up very, very quickly. I just put another sold out on our Shogun November trip to Guadeloupe there. And then we had Katmai Lodge fill up, but we got a couple spots that just opened up. We Kingfisher Charter is almost full. Whalers Cove is like right there almost. A lot of our trips, I know the Searcher day and a half trips are filling up very rapidly. We have three trips on the Searcher that you can join us on. All the trips that we have available are on our website, hookup1090.com. You go to the trips page. And they're very popular. We could pick prime dates, and we only do business with the people that are the best.
No doubt about that.
Get sure to that when you go on a Let's Talk Hookup Charter. We've been there, done that, so we can kind of guide you to the right spot. So check it out on our website, hookup1090.com. Let's go ahead and jump into the phones, Rick.
You got it, man. Let's talk to Sam. He's calling us from Irvine this morning. Very patient caller. Sam, thanks for hanging in there with us.
Good morning. Great show. I've become a fan of fishing for white sea bass, and I went on your website, and it's a nice website. I was just curious, how are you guys funded for all this research?
Well, we have try to get money to keep the doors open from anywhere we can, but first and foremost, Tom Flager and the Flager Foundation has been a really big help, supports us through good and bad. And we have a lot of funding currently from federal resources as well, the federal government. Since we work with managers to help fill those data gaps, we work with the Pacific Council. We do apply for several grants per year, and currently we have a lot of federal work. So federal, state, as well as private funding. And you can learn more about it at our website, which is www.peer.org. Every penny helps.
I mean, that's near a full-time job just applying for grants, right?
It is. That's what I'm doing right now. This is the time of year my behind gets stuck to a chair, and I'm sitting in front of I started getting the carpal tunnel from just typing.
No. You
know, this is the time of year.
So yeah.
We're right there right now.
That's yeah. Cool. So if you want to help and you want to know how to help, just go to peer.org.
Correct.
And that's that kind of describes the whole situation.
Yes, exactly.
All
Thank
right.
you very,
very
much.
Good. Thank you a lot for the call.
All right. Let's keep rolling with the phone calls. This time talking to Norman. He's calling us from San Diego. Hi, Norman. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. You know, I got a question about the stock assessment. And the question I have is, like, for species like salmon that come back to the same, you know, river mouth, that's real easier to do. But for a species like salmon that range of a tuna, which ranges all over the ocean, and although it might be in restricted zones, its range is very wide. Now, how do you tell if a stock assessment, how do you distinguish a good stock assessment from junk science?
Well, all those stock assessments are peer-reviewed, so it does go through the same checks and balances that any publication would go through. The data source is the main variable there, and for different species, there's different abundance of resources for age and growth and natural mortality and all the parameters that go into these stock assessments. So depending on your database is the strength of your stock assessment. White sea bass is a little bit limited in some of the data areas, the age and growth and some of the recruitment indices. So I'd say it's a relatively strong data set, but the assessment's only as good as your data.
And some of these studies are done by, well, these projections are just done by modeling instead of actual sampling. Can those be relied upon?
I think almost all of them are. Some have a lot of modeling involved. And to be honest with you, stock assessment science has come so far in the past few years.
Yeah.
We're able to incorporate all of these factors. Kayak fishermen, for like the bluefin tuna assessment, you take the world's most renowned tuna stock assessment scientists, you get them all together. And, you know, it bothers me when I hear someone say, oh, you know what, those scientists that worked on that bluefin tuna stock assessment are a joke. Well, you know what, they're not. They're the best we have. And they want to see, they work for like the IETTC, they want to see fishing occur, but they also want to see long-term sustainability. So fortunately, we have really good tools now. Unfortunately, it's always going to have some modeling, and there's things like recruitment. Recruitment affects how many fish are going to be there in the end, and if we don't know much about recruitment, it's always going to be a little bit of a gamble.
What's your thought on the proposal to list Pacific bluefin as an endangered species?
I think that I personally think that that's that's not reality.
Not attraction.
Okay. Not reality.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, find me an endangered species in which we can still remove hundreds of tons.
Yeah.
At one time in one location.
Spawns millions of eggs.
Yeah.
Per,
yeah.
Thankfully, tuna are very resilient. You know, we see bluefin or yellowfin tuna are able to come back from really, bad situations relatively quickly. A lot of these fish, like bluefin tuna, do take quite a few years to reach sexual maturity, but thank God they're very fecund. So,
So the guys that are saying listed as endangered species are not the guys doing the studies. They know the reality.
Correct.
So
correct.
Don't blame the scientists.
No, it is not a scientist. That's probably more of an NGO push to halt fishing altogether.
Yeah.
I think that every
NGO, what is that?
Non-governmental organization.
Okay, kind of like an extreme environmental group.
Kind of like PEER. PEER is an NGO, but we're actually a working foundation. We study the fish. Yeah. We actually
you're realists.
Yeah. there's a few environmental groups that are pushing certain agendas.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we want to see fishing happen, and I think a lot of the scientists that work actually, if you're working on the stock assessment, you want to see fishing.
Sure.
You want to see it, and you want to see it long term, and that's why there's a lot of concern because it is at a real low point.
Yeah, and especially white sea bass. That's good.
That's why we're here as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure. You mentioned a true endangered species, and that's the Bagheta porpoise in the Upper Sierra Cortez. I think their numbers are down to like 12 or 15 animals.
Yeah, endangered species. I mean,
that's a true endangered species.
Yes,
yeah.
Leatherback sea turtle is another one.
Yeah,
there's a few other species, and we don't spend a lot of time focused on them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, we all know that species where there is a danger of extinction, in my eyes, that's what I consider to be an endangered.
That's
species.
When you list them as an endangered.
Well,
species.
There's a lot of criteria that are used to unfortunately list a species, which you can get away with. So.
Yeah. Interesting. Hey, Norman, thanks a lot for the phone call.
Great question.
Yeah, really good stuff.
All right, let's jump right back in. Talk to Tom. He's calling us from Temecula this morning. Hi, Tom. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Morning, guys. Great show. My question is, back in my days, back in the 70s, we saw a lot of marlin and, the albacore. You know, that stuff came right up on the beach, between Catalina and, right off Newport. And I was wondering, is that a water quality issue? I know there's been a lot of bait around anchovy this past year. And, we saw that marlin, I'll go back up to the Channel Islands up there. I was wondering what your take is on that. Is water quality an issue in the overall picture on some of that?
I think I'll take a stab at this. I think water quality is critical, especially for inshore species. White sea bass, halibut, anything you use uses a bay or an estuary, water quality is very critical. When you get offshore, I think that it's a little more variable. I think currents have a lot to do with where fish end up and where they go, and a lot of times we don't pay that much attention to them. We'll see fish for some reason stack up in one spot. And then in the season, they seem to be showing in the same spot over and over and over again. And oftentimes, it's not the same fish. They're actually moving around, but that is where the current's bringing them to. So I hope to see albacore inside on the 14 and the 267, and I'm sure we will at some point. But I guess first we have to have an albacore in Southern California.
What's an albacore?
First, right?
Yeah, oceanic conditions are a big driver. The water quality is, like Chiefy said, more an inshore issue.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, it was a long time ago, we used to hear of people catching marlin on the Whistler Buoy off of Point Loma.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I've personally hung one there fishing on the kelp in La Jolla. Yeah. It does happen.
Yeah.
And especially when you get that mackerel pushing right up on the beach, but the conditions have to be optimal.
Well, look at phenomenal condition. I mean, there was a wahoo caught on the Whistler Buoy a couple years ago.
Yeah,
you know what
sure.
I mean? Like, it happens if the conditions are right and the
feed is
right.
And our kids will be talking about that.
Exactly.
They're going to be like, I remember this.
Yeah.
But that's offshore. So that would be an offshore condition. That's going to be that. Even just, what is that, 3 miles off, something like that? That's not going to be temperamental to...
Oh, and I bet you if you were a poll of the audience there, I bet you there was some wahoo caught when they were catching them really inshore because there were some nice blue conditions. Yeah. There was a lot of bait. there was a lot of those the Oxus, the small bullet tuna right on the beach.
Yeah,
no one was paying attention to those, and there was definitely some wahoo around them. So I'm sure a few were caught by kayaks.
Neil dropped a yo-yo jig on a school of what he thought was yellowtail in La Jolla. I mean, in La Jolla, where we fish yellowtail just outside, and did not get the fish, which is a real bummer, but we're certain had a wahoo strike on a yo-yo jig.
Gee.
You know,
inside.
Where we fish yellowtail at, you know, certain.
Go to the East Cape. You can see those things right behind where the boats are moored.
Oh, yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning. You know, one thing that Flager Institute has been doing work on is that deep drop swordfish. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. No problem.
That's where some of our NOAA grants are currently coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been working the past few years on off the West Coast you catch swordfish basically two ways. So inside the California Exclusive Economic Zone, which is out 200 miles. We have a drift gill net fishery. It's been around since about 1978. And we have a harpoon fishery that's been around for over 100 years. Unfortunately, both of the fisheries have been really suppressed. And it's probably not because of a stock situation, but rules and regulations have really impacted the drift gill net fishery. And a lot of those guys used to fish above Point Conception, and they can't because of the leatherback sea turtle, which is a critically endangered species. So we came up with the idea of using tag data to identify alternative ways to target swordfish to provide some opportunity for harvest. Because right now, we buy a lot of swordfish from other places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's oftentimes the same stock, but we're just providing jobs to Mexico and Korea and other countries.
Sure.
And caught not so sustainably sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
So through the Pacific Council, we have a exempted fishery permit right now where we have five vessels testing deep-set buoy gear to catch swordfish. Seems to be very selective. Catch very few other things.
Interesting.
Occasional blue shark.
Occasional big-eyed thresher, but not much else feeds really deep during the day.
And the good thing about the deep-set gear is you can actually let go of something that's an unintended catch. We had a couple of elephant seals that interacted with the gear. They come up, you unhook them, they're on their way, which is a good thing. And that can't happen in an overnight soak of a long line. We're just trying to identify fishing opportunities which we consider to be acceptable, for today's fishery off our coast.
Is there a legitimate shot for a local angler to fish deep for swordfish in Southern California?
Oh yeah, of course.
It's done on the East Coast quite a bit.
Yeah. Of course, but you have to have more patience than I have. that's the unfortunate part. That's the reality. So people tell me, can it be done? Oh, of course. It'd be the right place at the right time, but unfortunately with one boat, you're dedicated. You can't leave gear in the water or spread it out by miles. So we've actually done the calculation several times, and it's very cumbersome, like lots of hours soaking.
Worse than sea bass fishing.
Worse than sea bass fishing. Yeah.
I'm out then.
Yeah.
You can target them at night as well. And unfortunately, at night, we have a lot of sharks in the water column.
Interesting. This week's edition of Western Out There News, loaded with great information. How about that halibut picture on the front
page
of Western Out There News, and also lots of other good stuff. So check it out. This week's edition of Western Out There News. You always find out who's going to be the guest on Let's Talk Hookup in there and all other information. And speaking of halibut, talking about inshore species affected by estuaries and such like that, halibut is one of those species, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's a species that's not been doing as well as we'd like it to, for sure.
Is it water conditions, you think?
I think it partially is. Habitat, there's definitely a reduction in the amount of habitat available. The runoff doesn't help. I mean, the past few years, we can't blame runoff too much because there hasn't rained, right? But this year, I think that the loss of habitat really does affect it. And then also recruitment, we don't know all the factors.
Yeah, like you were talking about sea bass, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, let's try and sneak in one more call here.
You got it. How about we talk to Kevin calling from San Clemente? Good morning, Kevin. Welcome to Let's Talk Hookup.
Hi, Kevin.
Oh, I knew you were going to get me in there. Whenever you have these two guys on, I always think about the mortality rate of sea bass and halibut with the tail rot. And I look at the launch ramp, I see the people still using those green nylon old school salmon landing nets you see up north. And I wonder if they had just enough time to talk about what net they should have. There's only one answer. And then maybe talk about fish handling a little, if you have time.
Yeah. We, for our tagging work, obviously the fish condition's critical. We don't tag if they're hooked deep just because of the reduced survival rate. We use a nylon knotless net. It's made by a Duraframe. It's a big green aluminum frame net with a small mesh, really soft on the fish scale and fish slime. They don't lose the scales like they would with those big green nets you're talking about. We try to work quick and keep them on in a tagging cradle for a very short amount of time. Under 2 minutes, usually you're fine. But, yeah, you can see some delayed mortality from that mucus layer on the fish is critical for their survival. Without it, they're vulnerable to a bacterial infection, which is that tail rot you're talking about, the red skin they get. So that makes them vulnerable to infection.
One thing we know for sure, non-skid is not really good for these fish.
So don't set the fish on the deck is
so
what you're saying.
We see it all the time. They're like, oh, it's a short, and they bounce them.
Yeah.
And then the thing starts going ape, especially a little halibut, on the non-skid, on the boat. And then, you know, it bounces, beats itself up quite a bit, and then you toss it over the side. I'd rather see it just cut off in the water.
Yeah.
You know, just leave the hook in the fish.
Let it deal with the hook.
Yeah, that's better.
Especially if they're deep hooked, we found that cutting the hook's better than trying to remove it.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for the call this morning.
And when we come back, we're going to find out what lucky guy's got himself a 3-quarter day trip aboard the Liberty. More Let's Talk Hookup coming your way on the Mighty 1090.
Fisherman's Landing is the top choice in local and long-range fishing. Hi, this is Doug Kern. Our hardworking crew is always looking for ways to improve your fishing experience. We offer the finest open party trips from 1 to 3 days, the best charter boats available, and of course, our world-renowned long-range fleet is second to none. We are proud to say Fisherman's Landing is now a full-service sport fishing operation, offering half-day trips on the Dolphin, and now, for the first time in the long history of Fisherman's Landing, we have 3-quarter day open party trips on the Liberty. We built the Liberty specifically to offer a better experience. Run by veteran captain Taro Takeuchi, the 85-foot Liberty is the first open party 3-quarter day boat to offer bunks for your comfort. She also has huge bait capacity and RSW fish holds to keep your catch fresh. Plus, Liberty has a big galley and 2 interior heads with showers. Our open party trips from half day, 3-quarter day, or 1 to 3 day trips can be easily booked online at fishermanslanding.com or give us a call at 619-221-8500. I'll see you at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
Yamaha's Choose Reliability sales event is on. For a limited time, purchase a new select eligible 2.5 to 300 horsepower 4-stroke outboard and receive either 2 free years of Yamaha extended service coverage or up to $1,500 in dealer credit. Reliability starts here. Yamaha. Offer ends March 31st, 2017. Subject to change at any time. Other restrictions and conditions apply. Choice offered to Florida residents is a 24-month Yamaha limited warranty. See authorized participating Yamaha outboard dealers for details. This promotion cannot be used with any other Yamaha offer.
Cass Tours is a family-owned and operated travel company that specializes in taking you to great fishing destinations. They take pride in providing the best and most affordable vacation packages available. For over 20 years, Cass Tours has been creating unique sport fishing and vacation trips. Whether it's a fishing trip, a family vacation, or an adventure, they will provide you the service and value you deserve. Call Cass Tours at 800-593-6510. Or check casttours.com.
Great boats, free parking, and a fully stocked tackle shop. Just a few of the reasons Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top charter boats like the Aztec, Cortez, Endeavor, Eclipse, Apollo, Outer Limits, Pacific Star, Elgato Dos, Alexis Pride, Privateer, Tribute, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth Sea Watch in San Diego offer the finest half, 3-quarter, and full-day trips available. Check out the full-service tackle store at Seaforth Sport Fishing. And it's all run by fishermen for fishermen. 1717 Quivira Road, just off Mission Bay Drive in Mission Bay. Book online at seaforthlanding.com.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup on the Mighty 1090. Here, the big winner of the 3-quarter day trip going aboard the Liberty out of Fisherman's Landing. It's going to Norman in San Diego. Norman, congratulations. You're going to love fishing on that new Liberty. It's a beautiful boat.
It is such an awesome boat out of Fisherman's Landing there. And guys, from Pier, Scooch and Chuggy, we need you to come back.
This is awesome, you guys.
Yeah, because
people
love talking science and love the work that you guys are doing along with Tom Flager. Hats off to Tom and his investment in making Pier possible. He is one of the good guys, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he's very dedicated.
Yeah, no doubt about it. If somebody wants to help out Pierre, wants more information on Pierre, how do we do it?
Yeah, just I think the best way would just go right straight to our website. You figure out a way to contact us directly. There's phone numbers, emails, and then you can read about a pop project. Especially, there's quite a few projects we didn't even touch upon.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
And it's peer.org.
Correct. www.peer.org.
And now, are you going to be involved in the Fred Hall shows? A lot of times you guys are.
We're usually down there. Yeah. We're usually down there, but I usually try to walk around and then meet up with everyone. We usually don't have a booth, but maybe one of these years.
Yeah, okay, very good. Well, thank you guys for taking
the
time.
No problem. Thanks,
thanks for all the hard work, and we'll have to get a picture of the boat so we can follow you around to the sea bass spot. Hey, thank you for listening today. Thanks to Adam and Ryan on the other side of the glass, and we'll be back next Saturday and Sunday. Next Saturday, Dale Hightower from Seaguar, talking fluorocarbon, long-range fishing, and more. And then next Sunday, the man, Captain Frank Lopresti from the Royal Polaris, will be in the studio with us. Thanks for listening today. Have a great week. We'll see you back here on the Mighty 1090.